This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
You know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. There is one food item where the frozen, cook-it-yourself version is every bit as good as what you get in a restaurant.
And what's that?
That's lasagna.
What brand are you using?
Oh, it's just,
any?
I don't know. Stouffer's,
just anything?
Kirkland, whatever. Whatever.
No favorite one, just anything.
Any of them. Oh. All of them. They're all just,
man,
fantastic.
I disagree.
Okay, that's my little pre-Fastest 15 message.
Bonus material.
It's bonus, yeah. I just ran into a friend of mine, and our wives and us were going out to an Italian dinner, and we were just talking about what we're going to order. And I said, gosh, I love lasagna. And I said, but you know what? The frozen lasagna is every bit as what you can get in a restaurant.
I think they're all different. Some are a little too sweet.
Nope. Oh, yeah, the two sweet ones.
Every
I'm with
Italian
you on
chef is just cringing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you. Oh, you hear the big controversy? What's that fast food place? Panera?
Yes.
Did you hear that big controversy?
Yes, the mac and cheese.
Yeah, somebody...
I don't even think it's that big of a deal.
...recorded a video that they get their mac and cheese in packets frozen, and then they dip them in boiling water, and then they cut it open and serve it. And apparently the employee's been fired. Which I get, because you shouldn't be doing company secrets on Snapchat or wherever. But they said it's a big controversy. I don't think when you go to fast food, you think there's some fancy chef grating the cheese.
Right. Trying to get the pasta just al dente when you drive through.
Yeah. Why would anybody be upset at that? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay, again, this is all bonus material. Okay, let's get to the Fastest 15. It is a world of news. In a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. And we start with an I told you so. As we have seen in Seattle, the higher minimum wage, according to a University of Washington study, has resulted in less take-home pay for minimum wage workers because they have seen their hours cut more than what they have gained in hourly pay. Now we have another story along those lines at Target, which is, I love Target.
I do too.
There are so many people who are, Walmart and Target snobs. I love them all.
I don't get that.
I don't either. Target's a fine store.
You're a lot of times you still get shocked at the prices and like, for real, I'm getting a deal and this is a regular price.
Exactly. Yeah. So Target 2 years ago said they would raise their minimum wage to $15 an hour by the end of next year. And there were labor advocates all around the country. You know, Kshama Sawant has built her... She's trying to get a national platform for $15 an hour. But store workers now report the wage increases are hurting them because their hours are falling, making it difficult to keep their health insurance and in some cases to pay their bills. CNN Business interviewed 23 current and former Target employees, and they said that with the hourly increase, their hours have been scaled back. One person who didn't want to give her last name, Heather, she said that her paycheck, she got a dollar raise, and her paycheck is $200 less, and now she's below 20 hours some weeks, and now they're losing the health insurance benefits. And this is just a function of how a free market operates. When the government comes in and artificially sets a minimum wage, businesses have to respond, especially in the retail sector, where they are all trying to fight off Amazon. And margins are getting increasingly slim. And they just don't have a big, huge pile of free money to give away to people. So if the hourly pay goes up, the hours are being cut. They also quoted one worker here in Seattle who was having the same issue with Target. And Target says, on average, our employees are working about the same number of hours a week, but they do acknowledge that, yes, they've had to cut pay in stores where A pay increase just cannot be justified by the store revenues.
But have you seen Target's revenues? I'm not buying Target's line. Have you seen Target's revenues?
Who is Target's number one group they have to be accountable to?
Well, obviously the shoppers.
Nope.
Customers.
Nope.
Shareholders.
Shareholders.
Yeah,
yeah.
But to make a, oh, Target's really hurting because now they're paying, and weren't they touting that they were paying $15 an hour?
Yes, they announced that they were going to do that by the end of next year.
So they were getting positive strokes for saying, hey, we're among those doing $15 an hour.
Right. Yeah. But they probably knew that so that they could appease these labor advocate zealots.
I'm just not feeling sorry for Target. They're doing great.
I'm not feeling sorry for them. But, frankly, I feel bad for the workers. And, they need to raise their job skills and their marketability so that eventually they can aspire to more than minimum wage jobs. But this is just the reality of economics. If they have in their lower performing stores that are on thin margins, and especially here in Seattle, where they're victims of an obscene amount of shoplifting, because we don't prosecute shoplifting around here, you cannot just give money away, and you can't create money out of nothing. And yes, they do have to be accountable to their shareholders first and foremost. That is their number one fiduciary responsibility of public companies. But it's not just Target. In Seattle, the University of Washington study found the same thing. Restaurant workers, they're working fewer hours with their minimum wage increase. And this artificial minimum wage, where the government values a worker more than a company does, because the only way any of us have a job is if we produce more in revenues for our company than what we get paid. That is it. And once you become a net negative for your company, you lose your job or you lose hours. And that's the reality of the world that these politicians don't seem to have any grasp of at all. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15. So I've talked about the mindlessness of the media. One thing I'm proud of, and I will say, here at Chiral, we have great diversity of opinion in the radio shows. There is no guiding hand whatsoever that tells any of us what to say or what to think or how to present an issue. I have found for almost my entire career, with the exception of a couple of years in the early 2000s,
I'm trying to think, what happened then? Oh, yeah, never mind. That one.
For the most part, I have found management to be incredibly supportive.
Supportive, yes.
Yeah. And as a result, you don't hear just a lot of similar talk. And I get so disgusted in the media where it's clear that major networks, and I'm talking about CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, they seem to get talking points from the Democratic Party, and they give them phrases that they all are supposed to use, and then they go out and they do it. And here's one of the latest montage, and I'm only going to play you a fraction of what's put together in this montage, but are you going to tell me that all of these hosts and anchors and guests and news people, that they all independently have come up with this same phrase for our president?
Was speaking like an organized crime boss.
He said this was classic mafia-style talk. About
absolutely.
You don't need to be explicit to set up a shady deal. I mean, if you've ever watched any mafia anything.
I mean, to people who see this kind of stuff in movies, you see mob bosses doing it.
Anyone who watches mob movies knows that's not how it happens.
This strikes me as a call that's really more appropriate to be reading a transcript of from a mob wiretap.
This is how a mafia boss talks.
We always have people talking about how Donald Trump speaks like a mobster.
I don't like these mafia-like tactics to try to intimidate witnesses.
We see this from mob bosses. We do not see this from presidents.
What those notes reflect is a classic
mafia-like shakedown of a foreign leader.
He gets the mob talk.
Donald Trump sought to run U.S. foreign policy the way Tony Soprano ran his crime family.
Okay, this is less than a third of the three-minute montage that I have. I think I've made the point. But that's not, how does this happen? That's not an accident. They get talking points, obviously, from the Democrats.
Just out of curiosity, how does that happen? I mean, I don't even know how that happens.
Well, when you have somebody like Jeff Zucker at CNN, for example, and several of those clips are from CNN, but it's several other networks, too. This Ronan Farrow book, some of the things that are coming out about how Jeff Zucker has just manipulated so many of their programs specifically to bring down the president. You know that Zucker has very close ties to Democratic National Committee people. And so it's handed down. But why?
Do you think they actually have like a reporter meeting and say, we're going to use terminology referring to mobsters?
It's impossible for me to believe otherwise, because there's no way that all of these so-called professionals independently have arrived at that same analogy.
The only way I can think that might happen is through social media, and then someone tweets it out and there's a quote, and then it's kind of just, I just don't see it in newsrooms.
But that's not a coincidence, obviously.
And I mean, were they repeating a quote? An actual quote?
No.
Weird.
Let's listen to another 20 seconds.
He thinks he's Tony Soprano.
I somehow didn't hear about Mr. Clinton.
I say the same thing about Bill Clinton. I'm not defending anybody acting gangster like
him. Good.
James Comey has likened Donald Trump to a mafia boss. I found myself having flashbacks to my earlier career as a prosecutor against the mob, he said.
These are all independent people. They're guests, they're hosts, they're news anchors. And it's very... This is why Cairo Radio is the only place you should ever tune in for anything. Anything! We'll cover all the other stuff that you are missing on those networks. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15... This is quite an example of racism. At Oak Park, Illinois, they have a board of trustees that run the city there. And a woman named Susan Buchanan, she was caught on tape berating her fellow board members. And what did they do that was so horrible? Well, we'll let her tell you.
I don't want to hear what you have to say.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I'm serious. Jim, why do you have an opinion on this?
Come on, Susan. This is... I won't say a word.
That's why I like to...
You shouldn't have an opinion on that.
I met with constituents of color, and quite honestly, some of the feedback was that some of this wording was ridiculous.
From birth, you have been white. From birth. Why are you arguing what is a system of oppression? You've never experienced one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So shut up! I don't want to hear from you. Just stop, Dan. Stop, Dino. You are not oppressed, and people in Oak Park are, and we are trying to recognize that as a community.
Mm-hmm.
This mayor and this board is obviously not willing to face history. We have a chance to make history. It is time for this community to face equity enough. And you stop it. You are a white male.
So she says, if you're a white male, you are not entitled to an opinion on a matter that's before the city. And then she turns.
What was the actual matter?
Something about equity. Some equity issue.
Talking about oppression.
Yeah. I mean, she's bringing that in. It was some language about equity. And then she turned to the mayor, Anan Abu Talib. He's Middle Eastern, and she had stuff to say to him, too.
Stop it. You are a white male. Your skin is light enough. Stop it.
I got elected.
He said, I'm not a white male. Your skin is white enough. So the mayor's sin is that his Middle Eastern skin wasn't dark enough to have an opinion about a matter before the school board. I'm telling you, I don't know why anybody runs for any office in any position in the land.
Hey, that's an extreme.
I really don't know why. I will never understand that. Okay, next up. I played this for you last week on Sesame Street. Were your kids Sesame Street, your boys?
Yeah, and I watched Sesame Street growing up.
Yeah, we watched it with our girls. I was a little too old when it first debuted, but Sesame Street, it's changed a lot because now they're taking on much more serious issues.
How come Carly's mommy had to go away?
Well, son, Carly's mommy has a kind of sickness, and she had to get some help.
Sickness? Mm-hmm. Like when Elmo has the sniffles?
Oh, no, it's not that kind of sickness. Carly's mommy has a disease called addiction. Addiction makes people feel like they need a grown-up drink called alcohol or another kind of drug to feel okay. That can make a person act strange in ways they can't control.
But why doesn't she just stop?
It's not something you can just stop doing, not without help from the right grown-ups.
I read a column from somebody who said, this is a horrible thing they're doing to children. And I agree.
That feels a little old, too. I mean, that feels like for a much more mature audience.
Exactly. Kids are going to have to come to grips with all of this at some point.
You need some escapism.
Why, instead of wrapping our 3- and 4-year-olds in our arms of love and making the world feel like a safe place, why do we throw this crap at them? And it's a serious issue in the adult and the teen world, and it's but for 3-year-olds, they should just, that's the only time in life.
It's so fleeting. The window's so
small. The only time where your life can be embraced in a protective hug of love and you don't have to deal with all the stuff that's to come.
Agree.
We don't need to accelerate it. So knock it off, Sesame Street. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Dory's Fastest 15.
Just 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Coming up next, it is the second edition of our brand new feature, Hump Day with Heward. Brock Heward will join you coming up next.
It's Hump Day with Heward.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline. Reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
Well, it is Wednesday afternoon, and that means it's time for week 2 of our brand new feature. Hump Day with Heward. Brock Heward joins us.
Good afternoon,
can I still introduce? I can't introduce you from 710 ESPN still, can
I? Oh, absolutely.
Can I?
Yeah, I'm all over 710
Would you prefer
ESPN,
if I introduced you from Fox Sports?
I'm on 3 days a week.
Give them the prestige.
I've got the Brock and Salk podcast. I got Pac-12 videos. Okay. I'm all over 710
all right,
ESPN.
All right, Brock
Don't try
Heward.
To shoo me out the
sorry,
door.
Sorry. Brock Heward's with us. Before I get into all the current event stuff, speaking of your podcast, Above and Beyond, a new season starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I understand in an upcoming episode, you're talking to maybe my favorite coach of all time.
I'm going to guess, Dory, the half hour that I spent with Tony Bennett taping a podcast for my Above and Beyond, which is the intersection of faith and sports. I'm going to guess of anything that I've ever been a part of. You're going to text me after you listen to that and say, that was the best thing you've ever done.
I text you that after every one of your episodes.
You text me a bunch of games and some of the episodes, but no, because it had nothing to do with me. Thankfully, he fills up about 28 minutes and 45 seconds of the half hour. I only had a half hour. We could have done 2 hours.
Yeah.
But he's in the midst of their season beginning. But I'm going to pretty much bet that you were going to listen to that half hour. And I know you're already a fan, as you said.
Yes.
But you are going to become a super fan. Just, he is so darn authentic. That's what he is.
After he became the first and so far only coach to ever lose to a 16 seed as a 1 seed, his post-game comments were the most beautiful, the most gracious, the most uplifting I've ever heard in my entire life.
And then, Dory, they left, and he shared this on the podcast. I hadn't heard this. They left and had to go a back route to the hotel because of death threats.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
So, you know, little things like that he shared in depth, a little bit more of those experiences. And just a remarkable guy, and I think you'll enjoy that.
Okay, so that's coming in weeks to come.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I can't wait.
Probably next week, yeah.
Okay, Seahawks, Russell Wilson, by everybody's account, certainly including my opinion, by far the best he's ever been through the first 6 weeks of a season. Why? What's different?
The game has slowed down so significantly for him. So I look at that from a playing field standpoint, and I would say that. But beyond the playing field, I think most important in this progress is he trusts Brian Schottenheimer, their OC, more than anybody he's trusted on the offensive side of the ball in his 8 years. And the game slows down, and you play with the confidence he's playing with when you have full belief in the guy that's speaking into your ear every play. And even when he's not speaking in for a series and the helmet goes down, he's running the plays that they had put in and installed and had planned for that game. I think that relationship with he and the coordinator is a pretty unique and special one. There was friction with Tom Cable. That never went public because Russell would never let it go public because he was going to take and nose the address to the high road and take it every time. But there was friction with Tom Cable, and Daryl Bevel was a guy that was a terrific human being, but just didn't have the juice and didn't hold Russ accountable the way that Brian Schottenheimer does. And I think that relationship right there is at the center of Russell's just kind of maybe last step of development he needed to take to go from great to elite, to go from elite to MVP, whatever that little step that he's taking right now, he's taking it, and it's fun to watch, man.
Yeah, it is, because I just look around the rest of the conference, and I still don't know about the 49ers. They're awfully good. They're awfully good. But we haven't played them yet, and if we can get them, then you can think about the best record, and every time they've gotten best record, it's been a springboard to the going to the Super Bowl, and it's fun.
Defense got to play better. It's weird to watch these games when we've watched them through lenses for the first 5 years, especially of Russell's career, where that defense was the dominant entity. And over the last couple, that started to change. And now to see that the offense is really the dominant entity of this team, you're kind of looking forward to them getting the ball and what's Russell going to do next and what can Lockett do and who's Chris Carson going to run over and DK Metcalf with his little binky mouthpiece, what is he going to do? And then you almost sometimes like fret, at least I do, like, man, come on, defense. Just don't give up points. Just don't give up an explosive play. Just do something on that side. It's a totally different paradigm than what we have seen through the first 6 years of Russell's career. But good thing for him playing the level he is that they're 5-1 because of him.
I think there's one other big difference. So in my opinion, I want to get yours. And I can't wait to talk to Pete Carroll about this day after tomorrow. But after they gave up touchdowns on the first three Cleveland possessions, first time since 2008 the Seahawks had allowed that, Bobby Wagner gathered the guys, and he gave them a fiery and passionate sideline speech. We've seen a lot of fire and passion on the sideline in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it was always about the team.
Correct.
I think it was about the ego of the person who was ranting and raving. And I get a completely different vibe this year in that way.
There's no question about it. You know, Luke Wilson was talking, not to just flip it away from that point right away, but Luke Wilson, who is back with the Seahawks, the tight end, has said, man, the command that Russell has now of this huddle, everybody is hanging on every last word. And I think just as equally defensively, Bobby holds that down. And you could feel that huddle, right? There was that whole defensive group that was around Bobby, and he was giving him an earful, embarrassed. I mean, this is just not who we are.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there were some other words, but beyond those.
I'm sure there were.
But those guys were hanging on it because he is the unquestioned leader on that side that they follow. Russell is on that side. And both of those guys are two of the most selfless, team-oriented dudes in this league and pretty good lead to follow.
Okay, one last thing for you. Followed this controversy with the pitcher for the Washington Nationals.
Dory, I don't speak controversy, okay? We speak sports and great stories like that. I allow you on the news side to
Daniel Hudson.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe their best relief pitcher, one of their best. He missed game one of the National League Championship Series so he could fly down to Scottsdale, Arizona, to be with his wife for the birth of their third daughter. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if you and I have talked about
it. I think we have.
I've talked about it with Wyman.
Yeah.
And I know his position on this, and I don't remember yours if we've talked about it before.
I believe we did talk about it, and I went home and I talked to my wife about it, mm-hmm. and I think my wife and I are on the same page. Induce. Get it done when you can go and get it done. You have proper medicine in this day and age.
Right.
Do all you can to induce. And if it doesn't happen, my wife would say, go win the World Series. Molly would say that.
She'd be like Adrian
yes.
telling Rocky.
Go win,
win
the World Series.
Win!
And you know what? Play that game for those few hours and then fly right back here. And who knows? Maybe I haven't given birth yet.
In fact, I listened to the guy's press conference, and he said he just goofed up the word. I think he tried to induce.
Yeah.
But he said, we tried to have an induction. So, but he seems like a really nice guy.
Good dude.
And for me, as the father of three daughters, yes. I hope that all my girls have somebody who prioritizes family.
Yes.
But they're paying you $5.5 million a year, so your family's going to be really comfortable for generations
because of what you do for a living. What you could do with that playoff check right there? You could hire a jet. That literally, and you could hire a detail security to get you out of that stadium the minute the game ends. And who knows? Maybe you could have even left the game early. You had a lead. You weren't going to pitch. And you get on a plane and you fly back and forth a couple times. And you've got the coin, not only in your salary,
right.
but in your playoff bonuses to go about doing that.
There is one other possible solution. The playoffs and World Series are always in what month, Brock?
October.
You never have sex in January. It's that simple.
Is that what it is?
If you're a baseball player,
you abstain.
Yes, you abstain for the month of January.
Or you use other contraceptives.
Now you're making me uncomfortable.
Okay, all right, gotta go.
Especially since this is called Hump Day.
Gotta go.
With your
rolls on, rolls on, rolls on, rolls on.
If there has been a public figure recently who has had such a fall in public perception than LeBron James. LeBron James, who decided to kneel to the commies in China, because LeBron James is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He has a lifetime contract with Nike. He wants to be worth billions of dollars. He needs the Chinese market to do that. And so a couple of days ago, he was very upset that the general manager of the Houston Rockets said, stand for freedom, stand with Hong Kong. And LeBron just kowtowed to the murderous Chinese regime. And it's very different because he did an interview with ESPN just a few months ago. And he talked about how important it is to speak out when you have a platform like he does.
Earlier this year, you were instructed to shut up and dribble,
yeah.
which is amazing, because if you had listened to that, we would not be sitting in this school that 300 kids are getting the benefit of.
Absolutely.
But I want to backtrack off that, because those comments came because you were critical of the president.
Right.
And I wanted to know why, while you do things like this, mm-hmm. it's also important to you to use your voice mm-hmm. to stand up for kids like that, even as high as criticizing the president of the United States.
Well, for me, I have a voice, I have a platform, and I have so many kids, and not only kids, but also adults and everybody that kind of look for guidance and look for someone to kind of lead them in a time where they feel like their voice isn't powerful. And when you see something that's unjust, or you see something that's wrong, or you see something that's trying to divide us as a race or as a country, then I feel like my voice can be heard and can speak volumes. And
So when you see something that's unjust or is wrong, his voice should be heard and can speak volumes. What a coward. What a hypocrite. Because speaking out against Donald Trump, all that does is it gets you wild cheering from other athletes. and from the Hollywood left. Oh, you spoke against power. What a hero. But that was in June. Now, LeBron, when asked to follow up on his despicable comments about China, he has had this to say yesterday.
I'll be cheating my teammates by continuing to harp on something that won't benefit us, you know, trying to win a championship, because that's what we're here for. We're not politicians. I think it's a huge political thing. But we are leaders, and we can step up at times. But there's times where I'm not saying in this particular instance, but, you know, if you don't feel like you should speak upon things, you shouldn't have to.
So when it might cost him money, he doesn't mind that there are a million Muslims sitting in re-education camps, which are essentially torture camps in China. He doesn't care that China executes more people every year than the rest of the world combined. Hey, LeBron, I thought when you have a platform and a voice, you're supposed to speak out against injustice in the world. Oh, only when it doesn't cost you money. I get it. Big Lead is next.